Shumrabyug.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Shulook. Shulisten, the podcast that takes a pop at culture.
Shulook.
Shulisten.
Shulook. Shulisten.
Shulook. Shulisten.
Shulook. Shulisten.
Shulook.
Shulisten.
Shulook. Shulisten.
Shulook. Shulisten.
Very good, Benjamin. You've done that ever so slightly faster this week because you are, as we all know, on a bit of a promise. But you look, Ben, we don't have time to get into your private life because we have to look at mad money things. Then we're going to go and have a look at three spooky trailers, including Abigail, trailer 2, Cuckoo, trailer 1, and there's three trailers, weren't there?
There were. One of them's disappeared.
Maxine. You've forgotten Maxine. You've forgotten Maxine. You didn't put it on the order, Ben. And Maxine, trailer 1. Then, would you believe, you have seen episode 1 of Ripley based on The Talented Mr. Ripley. And you've seen somehow, I don't know how you have time for all of this, probably because you're always rushing, four episodes of Renegade Nell.
Yes, indeed.
And we've both seen episode 4 of X-Men 97.
The only thing that keeps us in views anymore, Michael, X-Men 97. We'll be doing an episode 4 review. And then, Michael, this week I've been playing the new game, The Thaumaturge.
Oh, I don't even know what that word means.
Yeah, well, we'll get into it, Michael, on the podcast. And that led me down the rabbit hole of what a Eurojank game is. So we're going to have a look at that today. It's going to be great.
What even is it, Benjamin?
What even is it? But come here to me. Michael, what? You posted what? The most cryptic of things in our shared Notion today. Notion, if you're listening, sponsor us, you fucks.
Go on. Do.
Yeah. But you said, Ben, put Jim Lee pieces on the running order. And don't look it up, Ben. Cold react. So, Michael.
Benjamin. This is mad. Look, my friend and your Sean sent this to me. And I think... Jim Lee. You know who Jim Lee is, Ben, and I know who Jim Lee is, but tell the listeners in case they don't know who Jim Lee is.
Jim Lee is a titan of 90s comic books, ladies and gentlemen. He is the artist who brought you the X-Men designs that have now pretty much become everyone's go-to image in their head.
Yeah. And, you know, iconic Batman, Catwoman, Nightwing art as well. The go-to guy in the 90s for... And the one who's best survived the trials and tribulations of time.
Yes, because his foundations were solid. Go on.
You were saying to me the other day that you would love to get artist Jim Lee, artist extraordinaire Jim Lee, to do you a little commission, you were saying. You were going to pop along to a convention and you were going to ask him to do you up, let's say just a small little headshot. Let's say 3 inches side profile only.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what he's done, Ben? He's made it simple for you because he's released a price list.
Well, that's good of him. That's very convenient.
Isn't that convenient, Ben? So that 3-inch sketch of a side portrait, that's going to cost you a mere $1,000.
Piss off.
A mere $1,000. But look,
Piss
Benjamin, don't you worry yourself, because he'll also do you a full-size 11 by 17 inches with one character and limited backgrounds. And that's very reasonable. $20,000. $20,000 is all that will cost you.
Off, Jim Lee.
Jim Lee, Benjamin. He's living it up big style.
Jim Lee's made his money, though. This is what I don't understand.
No, he wants more money.
But, Michael, he's made his money. He's huge. He owns stocks in Image Comics.
Yeah. But now, when he's at a convention, he can do a doodle for a grand.
I'd love to do a doodle for a grand. That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. So my new plan, Ben, is just become a famous artist.
That's it. That's what you want to do, is it?
That's the entire plan. Yeah, I came up with an ulterior plan where I was going to travel back in time and design Jim Lee's X-Men characters before Jim Lee does.
Okay.
But then I had a little think about it. And what I thought to myself was, time travel is probably even harder than become a famous artist.
I don't think you could even charge 20 grand for a time travel trip, though. I think it might.
I reckon you could.
You reckon you could.
Yeah, I reckon you could. You just go to perverts and go, do you want to see Marilyn Monroe in the nude? And they go, oh, yeah. It's like, well, I'm not taking you.
What do you think? It's funny. I was watching David Attenborough's Mammals yesterday, Michael.
Speaking of Marilyn Monroe.
And I was watching David Attenborough's Mammals yesterday, and they were doing a segment on cheetahs, right? And one of the things that I didn't realize is, because cheetahs are raised a lot of the time on conservations now, Michael, because they're quite endangered.
Yeah. I don't know if cheetahs are endangered.
They're not anymore, thanks to conservation parks. But anyway, come here to me. One of the things I didn't realize was a lot of conservation parks make their money off safaris.
Oh, yeah.
And Michael, whenever a cheetah kills something, about 70 Land Rovers filled with what I can only presume are fat American tourists. They haul ass, Michael, and they surround the cheetahs to the point where quite often in a fit of overwhelm, the cheetah will back away from the kill they've just made.
Oh, yeah.
But what it got me thinking of there, Michael, and the reason I bring it up is, what points in time do you think, if we did invent time travel, would just be swarmed with 70 Land Rovers worth of safari people? For example, Marilyn Monroe and the Nip.
Marilyn Monroe and the Nip, obviously. Yeah. Okay, it has to be real, right? It can't be like something imaginary. So it has to be, I suppose, when Hitler shot himself.
Yeah.
Loads of people there to see that. People are like, oh, I'm gonna cop a look at that.
Yeah.
What else? What else would people time travel? Would they be invisible though, Ben? Are they behind some sort of like cosmic intertime like bird screen?
For comedic effect, no, they're not.
No, they're not. They're just standing there watching.
They're just hundreds of people. Yeah. And assumedly, again, Michael, I want you to take that stereotype of the fat American tourist in the Hawaiian shirt and the bucket hat, the big camera.
That's what we do on this podcast, Ben. We just do stereotypes of Americans for clicks. I suppose there'd be a whole stand over the grassy knoll for JFK's assassination.
Daily.
People would just be cycling in and out. Yeah.
Daily.
Through time travel.
Yeah. So there you go. But that's a good one. But come here to me, Michael. You've got another thing written here, presumably to mock me at my own expense. Ben's billionaire bulletin. What's that now?
No, you're going to tell us, Ben. What's going on with the billionaires? Who's winning? Who's losing?
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah, sorry. Very good, Michael. That's actually a nice little bit. I quite like that. Well,
Ben's billionaire bulletin. We're going to keep this up, Ben. You're going to have to do us the billionaire bulletin even when the current Disney controversy is over.
Great news, Michael. Great news.
Oh, go on.
They're all still pricks.
Oh, good.
So that's good. The old billionaire Bob Iger, Michael.
Yep.
He's won. He's only gone and won his case against Treyan and old Nelson.
It wasn't a case, Ben. It was a vote.
It was a vote. Case, vote. It's all the same.
It's all the same. Speaking of, Ben, breaking news. Jonathan Majors has just been sentenced to probation.
Oh, well, that's nothing.
He's off the hook.
That's hardly fitting for beating the fucking crap out of a woman, allegedly.
I don't know if he did beat the crap out of her, though, Ben, because I'm reading this statement as we speak.
Excellent podcasting as always from us.
Both. No, it's breaking. It's just happening now. The news is that both parties agrees that it wasn't justifiable. It wasn't worthy of a custodial sentence.
Oh, so his career was ruined for practically nothing then.
Bit of pushing and shoving.
He's pushing and shoving with the lads down the pub.
Ah, good man yourself. Anyway, Ben, sorry, go on. Billionaire update.
No, that's it. He won. He won the board vote and he has the faith of the Disney investors behind him. And it means he gets to continue making woke stuff, according to Nelson.
Oh, really? Oh, good. All right.
And Nelson will be allowed to wonder why black people exist in the privacy of his own home again.
Oh, very good. Oh, yeah. Wouldn't it be great to be a billionaire?
In other billionaire bulletin news, Michael... Yep. Elon Musk, of course, best of the billionaires.
Yeah,
best of the billionaires. He is raging against a new proposed bill in the United States that would stop people from having what conservatives deem anchor babies.
Right, go on.
In the United States, so where you migrate from a country and then you have a child in your new country, your chosen country, so as to anchor yourself in that country, essentially. Ridiculous, yes. Michael. He's raging against it, to which several noted commentators on the internet have pointed out that Elon Musk is from South Africa and has had several children in the United States.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, very awkward for him. So in other news, Michael, in you know, the ever-shifting lives of billionaires, still all pricks.
Still all pricks. Very good. Ben, speaking of inexplicable news.
Go on.
Who is your favourite demonic, angelic, 90s, super sexy comic book character created by Rob Liefeld?
Oh, you see, you stumped me by putting in Rob Liefeld. You got me. You got me.
Go
good
on.
Man.
Do you not know
good
who man. Well, Benjamin, I'll tell you now. It's I don't even know how to pronounce this name because I've never said it out loud. I've seen it written down 100 times, oh, yeah. But I've never said Evangeline.
Who knows, Michael?
I think it's Evangeline.
I thought that was the one that Neil Gaiman sued Marvel.
No, that was Angela.
Sued someone.
That was Angela, Ben.
Okay, right.
You have gone a bit wonky there.
Oh, that's unfortunate, isn't it?
If that's what you're looking at.
I'm just looking at Evangeline. Evangeline?
Evangeline. Evangeline? I think her name is Evangeline, Ben. And she's just another Rob Liefeld comic book underwear model character from the 90s that has... Look, Ben, I don't think we're going to be inundated by people coming for us for disrespecting Evangeline. Because I've never read an Evangeline. Have you ever read an Evangeline? Anyway, Benjamin, for Mad Hollywood News of the Week, your favourites and mine, but not always the internet's, Olivia Wilde and Margot Robbie have teamed up to do an Evangeline film?
Michael, what the fuck?
What's going on?
What is going on?
What's going on there?
It's madness.
Isn't that absolute insanity?
It is a bit. It's a bit of an odd one now. I won't lie to you. I mean, on top of that, Michael.
Yes, go on.
I heard Margot Robbie is now doing a Sims movie.
A Sims movie?
Yeah.
Look, obviously, they've learned from Barbie. Dredge the pop culture landscape of the 80s and 90s and see what you come up with.
Fucking bizarre, Michael. Look, absolutely Ben, bizarre.
Olivia Wilde is directing. And Olivia Wilde's always directing stuff, first of all. So there's nothing real surprising there. But I don't think like Margot Robbie has that much to do with this other than her production company is involved.
Oh, okay. So it's not starring Margot Robbie then?
I mean, it would make sense, I guess, just looking at the character. She's Barbie-esque. But it feels like it would be a bit of a step back. Unless they're doing some sort of weird satire or double reverse piss take of it.
I don't think Rob Liefeld would be on board for a satire.
No, I don't think he knows the. I don't think he understands the meaning of the word, Ben.
No, he lacks the. Well, I don't know what he lacks to understand it, but I doubt it. I doubt he's into it, Michael. I don't. Yeah, what's Evangeline famous for? Evangeline? Evangeline?
Ben, here's my instant reaction. She's an angel.
Yeah, yeah.
And she fights devils and whatnot.
Okay.
And she's sexy as all get out.
Mm.
That's pretty much
it.
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? Don't forget though, Ben, sexy. And coming as you do from the 90s, Ben, you probably forget how important the sexy
quite important
was in the early 90s.
Yeah.
The most important thing.
Yeah.
It was, in fact. Because that's when comics were still for horny teenage boys up to the age of 30.
Do you remember Witchblade, Michael?
Witchblade specifically?
Oh, I see what he did there, ladies and gentlemen. Excellent work from Michael Leonard. Witchblade, ladies and gentlemen, was on famous NYPD detective Sarah Pizzini, because the early Image Comics universe was all New York and all demons.
Everyone was always going around going, "Oy vey, I'm from New York.
I'm demon in here.
Get out of the road or whatever, you demon or whatever." Anyway, she's from that era of Witchblade, of Evangeline, of
the darkness.
The resurgence of Vampirella and Lady Death and...
Red Sonja.
Red Sonja. And what was that character, that's bad content, Ben. I can't remember the name of the character. Dawn?
Who knows, Michael?
I think I'm thinking of Dawn. Am I thinking of Dawn?
Do you remember Fathom? Soulfire? Yeah. Do you remember that?
Yeah, we're just naming sexy comic books now.
If J. Michael Turner was hired you were gonna get a ridiculously thin. I'm fairly certain he just drew everything based on an actual Barbie doll. Maybe that's where Margot Robbie's gotten confused. She's seen the anatomical proportions of 90s Image comics and gone, "Oh, that's Barbie. I'll do that."
Very good, Benjamin. Speaking though, as we do on this podcast, of not trusting children, we got another trailer for Abigail.
Yeah, wee Abigail. Don't trust her.
Little wee Abigail, Ben. And look, is this one of those films like Terminator 2 or From Dusk Till Dawn where the movie would have been much better served as a movie if they hadn't gone and spoiled the main idea in the trailers? They spoiled everything.
Probably, yeah.
They spoiled everything, Ben. So from trailer 1, we know she's going to get kidnapped.
Oh yeah,
and then they're gonna think they're just holding a little girl ransom, and then some spooky shit's gonna start happening, and then they're gonna realize she's a vampire, and then they're gonna trap her somehow in a cage, and then she's gonna go, "I'm not trapped in here with you, you're trapped in here with me," and then she's gonna break out, and she's gonna one by one kill them as they try to beat her, and then presumably Miss Melissa Barrera, God bless her, will survive or not.
Melissa Barrera would have been a very good Sarah Pizzini in a Witchblade movie produced by Olivia Wilde and Margot Robbie.
Well, there's still time, Ben. The 90s are back and they're considerably less sexy.
But come here to me. This is an excellent addition, Michael, the creepy child genre of horror.
Go on. She breaks out of that cage and does a little ballerina twirl.
She does loads of ballerina twirls, Michael. Michael, look, all I'm hoping for out of this, right? All I'm hoping for out of this is the part of Abigail's origin story is that she was one of the models for Degas' ballerinas, and he was such a lechy creep that she ate him. That's what I want.
Oh, very good. Is that famous? Is that how Degas died?
He was eaten by a vampire ballerina, yes.
Is it? Yeah, historically, yes. That's on record, is it? If I get to Wikipedia now, will it say that?
He's the only known case of artist death by a vampire.
Oh, very good. Dawn was the character I was trying to think of, Benjamin, by Joseph Michael Lisner.
Oh, I'm one of the Lisners sent it in, Michael, did they? Yeah.
He's one of the most popular Lisners.
Very good. Very, very good. Look, we probably won't see this, Michael. It's up there with, what was that one, Dolls, where there were creepy dolls killing everybody. It's up there with, that child's possessed by the devil, you know.
The Damians. Benjamin, it's easy for us to say we probably won't see this because we've both kind of forgotten to see films recently.
Who has the time, Michael? I'm watching 18 series a day.
Life got very busy. Anyway, Ben, speaking of what's going on in that spooky forest, your favourite genre, what's going on in that spooky forest? We saw a trailer a few weeks ago where people were stuck in a kind of glass house in a spooky forest in Ireland.
Yeah.
But what if that happened in America?
What if that was real?
What if it was real and it happened in America and Dan Stevens was there for some reason? Then you would have the film Cuckoo.
Dan Stevens, who was also in the Abigail trailer just there.
Was he?
He was, yeah. He gets eaten by her. He gets screamed at on the floor by Abigail.
Is that Dan Stevens? Why is Dan Stevens in everything?
Dan Stevens is in every horror thing you can shake a stick at because somebody saw him in Apostle and went, "Jesus, he's a fucking spooky bastard. Get more of that in there."
Ah, very good. Benjamin, one of the guys who was in Abigail died.
Ah.
Was?
Ah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Oh, that's terrible.
Who was it?
Angus Cloud, the guy who has a kind of Irish accent in it.
I know that name.
Yeah, yeah. He's dead anyway. He died of an accidental multiple drug overdose in July 2023.
Oh, yes, sorry, Angus Cloud. Yes, I do know who that is, Michael. Angus Cloud off Euphoria. Massive tragedy.
Yeah. Oh, what a shame. But anyway, Jan Stevens is there, and Dan Stevens is spooking you out by inviting you to stay with his family in America.
Look, if there's one solid rule for life, ladies and gentlemen, it's if Dan Stevens offers you anything, just say no.
Unless it's Dan Stevens from that Eurovision song.
That was great. That was fun, wasn't it? Dan Stevens is a closeted Russian pop star.
Or Dan Stevens from Legion. That'd also be fine.
It'd be a bit of banter, but I reckon you might die anyway. Aubrey Plaza might pop up behind you and go, and then you die.
She'd get you. That's how she'd get you. Anyway, Ben, Cuckoo, what's going on? Yeah, they haven't. They've done what the Abigail trailer and so many other trailers entirely failed to do. They've given us a sense of the tone, the setting, the how it's going to feel, but they didn't just tell us what's going to happen.
Yeah, no, they didn't at all, Michael. There's nothing given away in this trailer, and it's pretty damn good. That's the result.
It looks pretty spooky, doesn't it? I thought at one stage it was another Stay Away From Those Spooky Children.
It's not quite. It's Stay Away From That Spooky Village, which is another genre in itself, Michael. But, you know, pretty interesting. So the cuckoo of the trailer, the eponymous cuckoo, as it were, Michael, seems to be Hunter Schafer's character.
Hunter Schafer looks a little bit like Shauna Kerslake.
There's a touch of the Kerslakes about her.
A little bit, all right. A touch of the Tala.
Of the Bray Kerslakes. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. This has a touch of the Don't Go to That Spooky Bray.
It does, doesn't well. It? This very yeah. much looks like it could have been filmed in Bray or thereabouts, except they've put, like, American Diner signs up.
Which is unfortunate. Although, there is an Eddie Rockets in Bray, isn't there?
Is there?
I don't know. I've never been to Bray, Michael. I stay away from it. Bad things happen in Bray.
Very frightening place.
Very frightening place. But compared to me, the cuckoo of the title, Michael, seems to be echoed a few times when other characters from the village say, "You look like you don't belong here."
What are you doing here in Old Alleyways?
And then, Michael, it says, "Your family belongs here." Okay. But if, Michael, I reckon...
Go on.
I reckon, because there's a little hint from Dan Stevens, and this is a classic prediction, ladies and gentlemen, that people will find on YouTube in 6 months from now. Yeah. And I will have been correct or incorrect, but people will tell me, "Oh no, it's wrong, just watch the movie." And it's like, this is a trailer reaction for when the trailer is out and nothing else, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So prepare for a poor take here, everybody.
Dan Stevens turns around and he says, "We're trying to help a species survive. I reckon it's fucking aliens."
Do you reckon it's aliens?
And Hunter Schafer's probably a human who's found herself in a little alien settlement. On Earth, I reckon. Michael, one of the most unnerving things about this fucking trailer. Excellent stuff. Hunter Schafer's on a bicycle with some headphones on.
Great scene.
And there's... Well, she looks down. Because she's going at a fair whack on that bicycle, Michael. And she sees a shadow of someone reaching out to grab her. Turns around. Fucking ugly buggly.
It's an ugly buggly. I knew it was an ugly
right
buggly.
Behind her. Awful stuff. There are a few things, Michael, that instill a sense of fear in me. More than
Boogly
that person's moving a bit faster than humanly capable at full pelt.
Go on.
Because before we see that stretchy out grabby scene, we see someone darting through a village lateral to her. And Michael, I fucking hate that when someone's superhumanly fast. Oh, very uncomfortable. Not vampire fast,
no.
Not swooshy fast, no. Just... You move unnaturally quickly. I've hated it ever since 28 Days Later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or
don't like it.
Or Robert Patrick in Terminator 2.
Or Robert Patrick in Terminator 2. I don't like an unnatural human movement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it triggers the fear of the uncanny valley.
Yeah, yeah. Or The Ring.
Or The
when
Ring.
She's the ring. You know when she's the ringing at you? Yeah, yeah, exactly that.
Awful. Some great visual podcasting there on our audio podcast.
Anyway, Ben, I thought Cuckoo was the best trailer of the week, but there's another trailer that you forgot to put on the order, and it's Max Scene.
Ty West is back, Michael.
This is the latest in the Ty West, Mia Goth, Maxine trilogy.
Yeah.
Remind us of what's going on, Ben. I've forgotten.
Yeah, so Michael...
Not in this trailer, in the trilogy.
Yes, I know, Michael. Yeah, I know what you meant.
It was a bit of drama for you, that's all.
Bit of drama for you there for the boys. Bit of drama for the boys. That's our new podcast where we take a look back at all the great Irish playwrights who've graced us over the years. Bit of drama for the boys.
Nah.
That's what it's called.
Nah.
Episode 1's on Beckett.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ben, I never waited for God at all. I just said, fuck this. I'm not waiting.
I said, fuck this. Going his own way home. Out there in the Liffey Valley car park till all hours. Waiting for him to come out of the cinema. Never did. Come here to me.
What?
Ty West, Michael, is making his third in an unorthodox trilogy starring Mia Goth. The true line could probably be attributed to the
Ben,
ever...
You're in it, are you?
I'm in it, yeah.
I'm a little bit confused because you said starring me, a Goth.
Mia Goth, yes.
Yeah, you, a Goth.
Me, a Goth.
Very good.
Yes, it's me dressed up as Robert Smith from The Cure.
From Robert Smith from The Cure. Oh, very good. Throughline.
Throughline, Michael, is the ever-viral send from TikTok, I want to be a star!
Yeah.
And that is a famous line from Pearl, Michael, which was the second in this particular trilogy, and it starred Mia Goth's Pearl, who wanted to be a star, Michael. And it's pretty much the same as X itself. X is the first in the series, Pearl is the second in the series, and Maxine will be the third. And all of them feature a woman who is driven to demented lengths to become a star.
But this time there's a serial killer after her, Ben, and other times there was a slasher after her, and I think she was the killer, I think.
She's the killer in the first two. Spoilers for films that came out about 3 years ago.
Yeah, more even.
Give or take. This is a classic example of, and I think looking at the cast, this probably bears out. The first two films came relatively quickly, one after the other, consecutively.
They were made at the same time, we believe.
They were, yes. So one features around a small amateur porn crew in the 1970s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The second one features around a young lady who wants to be in the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the third one features around a porn star who wants to be in the pictures.
It's the same character, isn't it? Is this the same character?
I don't think it's the same woman. Is it the same woman?
Is this not the same woman? Is she not the one who survives the first film? I don't really remember how either of those films end.
I don't either.
I don't remember, Ben.
I don't either.
I've only seen them once. I thought they were good, but I don't remember what happened.
This looks good, Michael. This looks like one of those classic bits that embraces its genre wholesale. It's set in 1985, Michael.
And how would you tell?
Because it says in big kind of neon VHS tape letters, 1985.
Yeah, yeah. And then plays every popular song from the 1985.
Yeah, it was pretty great. So, Michael, there's a slasher in this one.
Oh.
Well, I reckon it could be Mia Goth.
It probably is, isn't it? She's always the mad one.
She's always the mad one. She's very good at being mad, apparently. But here, come here to me. I'll probably give this one a watch. These are always interesting.
Yeah, she was the same. It is the same character, Ben.
It's the same character. Thank you, Michael. I felt horribly there. That's an awful stuff for me.
It's the same character. Well, it's the same name and, you know, the same trajectory. So it makes sense that it's the same character.
Look, I'll take it. Yeah, why not?
Very good
stuff. I'm on board.
Ben.
Yeah.
You've been watching a lot of telly.
I have.
Tell us about some of it.
Speaking of creepy people that stalk around cities, Michael.
Yes.
Andrew Scott's in Ripley.
Oh, I forgot it was Andrew Scott. He's great.
He's an Irishman, so Napoli.
Oh, yeah. How's he doing?
He's doing grand, I suppose. So we got a trailer a couple of weeks ago, Michael, for Netflix's Ripley, an adaptation of The Talented Mr. Ripley by Patricia Highsmith.
I thought this was about Ellen Ripley.
It's not about Ellen Ripley, I'm afraid, Michael. That'll be in Aliens.
Aliens, yeah.
Romulus.
Yeah.
Which also has an Italian influence. So, I mean, look, could be the same film. Maybe it's a shared universe.
Shared universe. The Ripley cinematic universe.
Yeah, we're going to get Andrew Scott versus Aliens.
Yeah.
In black and white.
Andrew Scott goes up a line. Hey, my name's Dickie and I'm from New York. And the aliens are so confused. They're like, well, he must be from New York. We best not impregnate him with our spawn.
He says all the right things.
Yeah.
But come here to me.
He says he knows Dad. Well, I didn't think we had a dad.
Come here to me.
No, Ben, I'm obsessed with the idea of The Talented Mr. Ripley confusing aliens.
This is pretty good. I've only seen two episodes. Well, I've seen one and a half, so I'm not going to review the second episode because I can't, Michael, because I've only seen half of it.
Definitely seen half it.
But episode one is a slow burn, but done exceptionally well, Michael. It's a slow burn you'll want to see through. It is arguably one of the most fabulously shot things I've seen from Netflix ever.
Oh, it's very cinematic. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so it's all black and white, Michael, but the shots, the lingering, very little dialogue in episode one. The shots are fabulous. They're incredibly well composed. It's clear that there's a huge influence from all kind of noir cinema of the late 40s, 50s. It's all been lashed in there. And it's pretty spectacular. Very, very enjoyable. The main cast are Andrew Scott, Johnny Flynn, Johnny Flynn, people might have seen. You'll see Johnny Flynn all over the place, Michael. Look his face up and you'll know exactly who I'm talking about. I can never remember. He's never had this big break, really. He's quite happy to be a character actor in the background. And then old Dakota fans.
Dakota Fanning is in it, is she?
Yeah, she's in there. She's playing the character that that awful young one who sells crap to women was. What's her name?
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah, that's it. She's playing her character, Marge. Fabulously shot, incredibly tense, oddly comedic in places, Michael. There's some real great Lost in Translation moments where Andrew Scott is trying to communicate with people in a tranny, or which is the small seaside Italian village in Napoli.
Yeah, okay, very good.
And there's just a lot of comedic moments. It's very enjoyable. And then there's horrible moments of tension. Andrew Scott is spectacular as usual. He keeps doing a practicing being human in the mirror. And it's great. And the first episode sets up what will become Tom Ripley's ultimate goal, which is to assume the life of Dickie Greenleaf, who's Johnny Flynn's character. And he does it fabulously, Michael.
I thought it was to get an alien egg and bring it back for Weyland-Yutani Corporation.
No, that is Michael Fassbender in Steve McQueen's Shame.
Very good. Benjamin.
Yeah.
Did the Dakota Fanning just make this while she was in Italy anyway, or was she making this and that's why she decided to be in... it wasn't John Wick, was it? The Equalizer 3. Did she just make them at the same time?
Like, I think she must have. Maybe she just stayed there. Maybe she's like, maybe I'll make people come to me.
Yeah, I'm just in Italy. If anyone needs a blonde, ephemeral woman, I'm in Italy.
Yeah. And look, she is a blonde, ephemeral woman,
Ben,
in this.
Speaking of, though.
Yes.
Women kicking ass.
And taking names.
You've seen Renegade Nell, which I only became aware of the other day. But you've seen it.
Michael, I've seen 4 episodes of Renegade Nell.
Too many.
Yes. Well, not actually. It's quite a good show. But anyway, it stars Dublin's own Louisa Harland, Michael.
Get out of here, Benjamin. Her from out of Rathfarnham. That's where I'm from out of.
You're from out of Rathfarnham. Straight out of Rathfarnham, as the old rap song goes, Michael.
Yeah. I thought she was from Northern Ireland, but she's not. She's from Dublin.
She's not, Michael. 2 of the Derry girls are not, in fact, from Derry.
Cheek of them.
Cheek of them. But come here to me, Michael. Renegade Nell is set in the 1700s, Michael.
Go on.
And it's about a highway woman, as you may have guessed, called Nell.
Right.
Now, but Michael.
Yes, what's she up to?
This isn't your run-of-the-mill highwaywoman hijinks. This is about a highwaywoman who makes a pact with the fairies and gets superpowers anytime she's threatened by a small fairy flying into her gob and possessing her body.
Oh, that's what's going on in the trailer, is it?
That's what's going on in the trailer, Michael.
When the little fairy flies into her body, Ben, and possesses her, does she lose her faculties or is she still in control of what's going on?
No, she's still in control. She's just augmented, Michael.
Oh, like Captain America.
Like Captain America.
And what sort of stuff is she getting up to?
What's going on, Michael, is that she's the daughter of a publican.
A Republican?
No, a publican, Michael.
All right, someone who supports United Ireland.
No, Michael, you son of a bitch. Although there are big tones here, Michael. This is set against the backdrop of the Jacobite kind of plot to overthrow the crown.
Oh, that involved Ireland.
It did on occasion. It absolutely did, Michael. But come here to me. The best thing about this, Michael, is on the surface, it's a classic kind of, oh, the rich, they're real bastards to us. But deep down, Michael, what's happening is all kinds of ugly, boogly, gothic nonsense, Michael.
Benjamin, was this not out 2 weeks ago and called The Adventures of Dick Turpin?
Yeah, but that was an actual highwayman and it starred noted oddball.
Yeah.
Noel Fielding.
Yeah, but is this not an actual highwayman or highway person?
She kind of is, Michael, but there's loads of gothic ugly boogly stuff happening.
What sort of gothic ugly boogly are happening, Ben? Are they coming to get you?
Michael, spoilers from here on out, because we're going to have to do a few spoilers here.
Okay, love a spoiler.
We're going to have to do a few spoilers here. But I thought originally, Michael, this was kind of a classic Disney romp. You know, I thought it was for the kids.
Oh, yeah. A bit like Willow, but not rubbish. Yeah.
Until, Michael, I saw one of the characters get shot through the head and then proceed to haunt his son in every episode after, with a bullet through his head going, "You turn my stomach."
Oh, what a prick.
Yeah, it's real. Well, no, he deserved it. The young fella deserves it. The young fella had it coming. But anyway, we get into that a little bit. But Michael, then Adrian Lester's there. Do you know Adrian Lester?
I don't know
Lester?
Who that is, Ben.
No, maybe it's Aiden Lester. I forgot it wrong. Oh, no. What if I've got it wrong, Michael?
It is. It's Aiden. Adrian.
It's Aiden. Aiden
Adrian.
Lester.
Adrian.
Adrian. I got it right the first time. Yay!
Isn't it? He was born Anthony Harvey.
Why'd you go with Adrian Lester? I suppose maybe it's a bit of, I don't know. Anyway, Adrian Lester's in it, Michael, and he plays a big evil lord called Poynton, and he's got all kinds of ugly buggly powers. He's a bit like Lord Blackwood, Mark Strong played in that Sherlock thing.
Oh yeah, what sort of evil stuff is he up to?
Well, Michael, big spoilers here for the episode, but at one point he summons Herne the Hunter and possesses his body to murder Nell.
Oh my gosh, that seems excessive.
Yeah. So one of my favourite things about this, Michael, is that it's a bit fucking janky CGI-wise.
It feels of the ilk of BBC's Merlin.
It's got big BBC Merlin vibes. It does. It does have that, Michael. It does have that, no doubt about it. But one of the characters, Billy Blind is the name of him, Michael, and he's the fairy that helps Nell harness these powers. It's played by Nick Mohammed, him off the Ted Lassos, Michael.
Oh, yeah.
Benjamin. Yeah, Nate the Great.
Yeah, Benjamin, is Renegade Nell Irish?
She's not. She's very English. Oh, but she does a great accent, Michael.
Well, we'd probably have to leave that up to the English to tell us.
No, she does a great accent, Michael.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, it's not hard because they're English.
Oh, very good. Okay.
Yeah. See, that's what a Republican would say, Michael.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, heard that. It's got Alice Kremmelberg in it, Michael.
Okay.
And if you know, you know. And if you're a fan of the Goblin Queen in X-Men 97, Alice Kremmelberg will probably do it for you.
I don't know who that is, Benjamin, but fabulous stuff.
Have a look up there, Michael. You'll see what I mean. Fabulous show, Michael. Very well acted. The set pieces are great. As far as period costuming go and kind of accurate sets and stuff like that, fabulous stuff. It's a bit like a BBC period piece with some gothic shenanigans going on in the background. I thought it was really enjoyable. I think Louisa Harland is amazing in it, Michael.
I think it's great that Louisa Harland seems to be the most versatile one out of Derry Girls.
It's your one, Siobhan. I want to say Siobhan Corrigan, but I'm definitely wrong on that. Derry Girls, what's her name?
Doesn't matter. Just keep going.
She was in that one there, the Bridgertons. She's in a new one. She's in a new one. Nicola Coughlin plays a character called Nicola. Michael is in a new thing on Channel 4. She's doing very well as well. I think it's a bit of a shame that the two girls from Dublin are coming out of this. Great. I think it speaks possibly to the favouritism of Dublin life somehow.
She's from Galway.
Oh, maybe she is. Who knows? Look, either way.
I thought Nicola
Coughlin, Louisa Harland, great stuff from the Lotties.
Doing great. They're both doing fabulous. Ben.
Right, so fab stuff. Fab stuff from the girls. Fab stuff. Yeah.
Fab stuff. Benjamin, we've both seen the latest episode of what this show has now devolved into, an X-Men 97 fan cast. And I'll tell you what, it was a flipping weird one, wasn't it?
It's a splitter. It's a two-parter, Michael. I didn't like it.
Yeah, very weird choice. I don't think the original animated series ever did anything like this. So it's a double header, basically. It's the first half is an episode called Motendo, which is a Jubilee Roberto da Costa and Mojoverse episode. And then the second half is a very heartfelt and simple story called Life Death, which is from a comic issue, a seminal comic issue of 90s X-Men. But it's weird for them both to be presented as 20-minute vignettes in the same episode.
Oh, very strange.
I was speaking to my lovely lady friend my wife, about this, because as you know, she's been watching this with me, and she's a convert to X-Men 97. And what we reckoned was this was originally presented like any other episode, interspersed, but the two things that are going on are so tonally different that you actually can't intersperse them and have a cogent episode.
Yeah, it had to be a double header essentially, because it is jarring. There's a real shift
change in tone between these two episodes. And this is only the minorest of spoilers to get into it. One of them takes place inside a matter of minutes, and the other one takes place over, feels like days, if not weeks.
I think it's supposed to be weeks, isn't it? They're supposed to have. So, I mean, the rate at which some of this is being told, Michael, is.
Anyway, Ben, no, hold on. You're jumping the gun. Let's talk about Motendo first.
Right. So Motendo brings back that most classic and bizarre of X-Men villains, Mojo.
Yeah, really oddly cut, really weirdly edited episode to this. Feels like maybe it was a full-length episode on its own and they chopped and changed it down to be half an episode.
It did have that whack off it, Michael.
Yeah, but, Ben, in terms of fan service, this is one of the best episodes so far.
Spectacular, Michael.
Spectacular fan service. First of all, and most obviously of all, they get sucked off of this plane of reality into the Mojo dimension.
Yes.
And the Mojo dimension, Ben, in this form, takes on that most 90s of aspects, the video game.
Video game?
Because video games, Ben, very 90s.
V-90s, Michael.
V-90s. But what's best about this for a 90s X-Men fan, Ben, is it is almost pixel for pixel a recreation of the 1992 Konami X-Men arcade game.
You love that, Michael.
Oh, one of the greatest arcade games of all times, Ben.
There were Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Michael.
I would argue possibly even better. Six players, Ben. Now, it never really worked well, but six players. Can you imagine?
Yeah. So,
can you imagine?
It has some really... You could only get away with this in animation today, Michael. It has interspersed animation. You've got classic kind of janky X-Men stuff.
Mm-hmm.
New age janky X-Men stuff. And then full-on little arcade scenes in between.
Full-on little pixel art arcade scenes in the very spirit of the 1992 arcade game. Great stuff. And then it has another Fantabulosis throwback, which I don't know if people noticed just how big this was, but did you notice, Ben, that future old Jubilee?
Yeah.
She was played by the voice of Jubilee, the original voice of Jubilee from the 90s series.
Was she?
She was indeed, Benjamin. And that actor, that actress, didn't return to the series. She decided not to, perhaps because she's a 50-year-old white lady and she didn't feel super comfortable playing a Chinese-American
teenager.
That's
probably a solid call from her.
But what a way to bring her back and honour her contribution and pass the torch, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. She's playing a bizarre character, Michael, a very established character. Well, not very established, that's probably a stretch, but she's playing Abscissa. Or Abscissa is her name. And the only reason I found this out, Michael, because I watch it with the subtitles on, that's probably useful for a podcast deep dive. But she's a future version of Jubilee from Earth 92352.
Oh, 92352, that's one of the best Earths.
That's one of the best Earths, Michael. And unfortunately, she was enslaved by Mojo as part of a twisted game.
He's no use.
Mojo is the worst. He always freaks me out, Michael. And I think what was actually worse in this, Michael, might have been the fact that he's emaciated. Mm. I thought fat Mojo was bad.
Yeah, yeah.
But like emaciated Mojo is nightmare fuel, as it happens. But yeah, so Abscissa is essentially is enslaved by Mojo. And she becomes... I guess what you would call one of his four horsemen of the apocalypse, whatever Mojo's equivalent of that is. Mm. And he does her bidding. And yeah, it's bizarre. It's a kind of a really weird thing. Have you ever seen... You've probably seen Penance from the Civil War.
Of course I've seen Penance, Ben, a.k.a. Speedball, who built
her costume is remarkably like what Penance will don.
Very similar.
In Civil War. I have to imagine that there was a big inspiration there.
Very, very similar. Benjamin.
Yeah.
Having said that, though, very lightweight episode. One of my favourite things about it was its attitude to video gaming was that of the 90s when video games weren't cool.
Yeah, Magneto's real funny dick.
Magneto is a real dick about it. Roberto's like, I'm not being seen playing video games. I'm a cool guy. Give me a big kiss.
I'm a cool, hip guy. I'm Roberto da Costa.
Roberto da Costa, and I'm in the bloody 80s or 90s or whatever this is. Anyway, Benjamin, let's get on to the weird bit of the episode, a.k.a. Life Death.
Life Death, Michael. Life Death is fucking mental.
Weird. First of all, weird that they split it across, because it's going to be one episode long.
Yeah, by the time it's done.
By the time it's done. And the original comic was one comic long.
It's got to be, I reckon your thing holds some weight here, Michael, in that it's definitely a cut episode. I don't know if someone was a voice actor on part of the other one that they don't want to be associated with anymore. I don't know what happened, but something has caused that, because it's a weird decision.
Weird, odd. So anyway, Storm goes off and shacks up with Forge.
Yeah.
But this is where Forge came from in the comics. This is pretty much Forge's introduction.
Get out of town.
This is when we learned Forge's origin story and powers and basically everything about Forge.
Get out of town. Forge, who can build anything using his mind.
Yeah, well, not really using his mind. Using his mutant intuition. So he's not like Tony Stark or Rocket Raccoon, where he understands it. He can build it and then goes, and they say, how does this work? And he goes, I don't know. Shall we take it apart and find out?
Oh, that's interesting. I like that.
Yeah. That's his mutant, he has the power of mutant intuition. But he's also a Native American shaman, Ben, because it was the 80s or the early 90s. And everyone who's Native American also has magic powers.
Not to mention the fact, Michael, that there's a great, what I only assume, Michael, is kind of it's playing with comic book readers' expectations towards the end of this episode.
Do go on.
Because, and this is relevant to him being a shaman, Michael. And spoilers for the end of the Life Death arc. But a big old creature appears, Michael, an owl demon.
Yeah.
Called the Adversary, famously summoned by Forge to take on the people that murdered his platoon in Nam.
Yeah. Because all these characters, Ben. But the great thing about the fact that they've set this in 97 is that will still make sense.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's grand. It's cool.
It'll be nonsense in 2024.
No one looked that young. That's not going to happen. But the Adversary, but there is a small moment of reveal, Michael, where it's just a pair of red eyes and a big grey hand on a door. And I went, oh, it's the Nightmare King.
It's Shadow King.
King, if you're good at comic books and a good podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think every X-Men fan, other than people who've read Life Death, went, is that Shadow King? But I've read Life Death, Ben, and even I thought for a second, are we doing Shadow King instead of an Adversary? Are we going to tie this into Storm's upbringing a little bit? But no, it's Adversary. It's just big old owly Adversary.
It's just Adversary. An Adversary is voiced by the same voice actor as Aurora, which is really interesting.
Yeah. Right.
The Adversary is a big ugly bugly. And essentially was brought around to... It's a classic be careful what you wish for in the comics, because he invokes this demon creature to protect his platoon, and then it won't fuck off.
Yeah, sticks around and is useless.
Sticks around and is no fucking good. But a very interesting episode, Michael. Still a fabulous show.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Still a fab show. Still love it. Yeah. Still doing great things with the X-Men. A bit janky in places though, Michael. A bit janky.
You keep saying that, Ben. What the hell do you mean janky?
Well, Michael, janky...
I'm giving you a big wink.
I know. I know what you're doing, Michael. I know what you're doing. Janky is a classic word, Michael, meaning a bit wonky.
Oh, we'd say wonky.
But yeah, it's a bit wonky, bit banjaxed, bit janky. We're not really 100% sure where it's come from, Michael. It comes from the 1990s, and it emerged from black slang, apparently. But we always chalk it up to black slang when we don't understand words because we're racist. That's what white people do.
I don't know if I am, but all right, go on.
But come here to me, Michael. I was playing a game this week called the Thaumaturge.
I've never heard of it, Ben. I don't even know what that word means.
Brand new game, Michael. It's just out of there. Thaumaturge is a miracle worker, Michael. That's what it means. One capable of small miracles.
Okay. And what's the game about?
It's set during the bloody Russian Revolution, Michael, or just before the Russian Revolution. Rasputin's knocking around, and you play a thaumaturge, Michael.
And what are you up to?
And what you're up to is you're going around local villages, and you find demons, and you're enslaving the demons and keeping them.
Oh, that sounds great, Crack.
Yeah, it's great, Crack. It's a good old game. It's a little wander around. It's an isometric kind of wander around RPG. It's a good old time.
And what exactly makes this janky, Ben?
Well, Michael, it falls into the category of Eurojank, but I found myself asking the same question, Michael. I said to myself, why the fuck do all these articles from IGN like keep saying Eurojank? I don't understand.
Oh, well, Ben, we very much risk if we're going to start talking about IGN going into the whole IGN controversy at the moment. But
what's happened with them?
Oh, Ben, IGN are going through the absolute ringer at the moment. IGN, there's a... Look, we won't get into it too much, but there's a massive, massive controversy and civil war happening in the gaming press space.
It's mad.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, I suppose the overall claim is that most of the people reviewing and commenting and writing on these websites don't play games.
Oh, okay.
And they don't like gamers. So there's a kind of a civil war happening between the gaming media outlets and, I suppose, the people who they don't think are their intended audience. But anyway, go on.
Anyway, Eurojank, Michael, is a term that was made very, very popular in 2016 on the Super Best Friends podcast. And it's a genre term used to define games that are particularly associated with Eastern European developers. And kind of the defining factor of a Eurojank game is a very ambitious game in terms of storytelling and gameplay that sacrifices high-end graphics in order to ensure a better playing experience. So the jank in this particular case, Michael, is a lack of developer polish on the visuals of the game. That makes sense?
Yeah, sounds very American cultural imperialistic, to be honest.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. What's it's pure racism.
Yeah, that's an awful term. What's it got to do with Euro?
Because it's predominantly associated with Eastern European developers, Michael. It is actually very racially coded now that you say it. Right, that's the end of the episode, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not giving that any more airtime than it needs to get. No, we'll do a little bit more, Michael. But I am going to have to wrap this up very quickly, ladies and gentlemen. I'm running out of time.
He has to go. He's on a promise.
But Eurojank titles are really sprawling action RPG games, and they're very ambitious, but unfortunately fall short a little bit on the polish, as I said. They get a bit glitchy, hence jank as a term that goes with that.
Like Skyrim.
Yeah. Yeah, like Skyrim. Great example. Yeah. They feature like really complex interactions and systems, but they're not necessarily what you would call intuitive, Michael. Which, they're not a smooth gameplay experience.
Which European country is Bethesda based in? Hold on, I'll just look it up here. California.
You see what he's doing to me.
That's a strange fucking place.
See what he's doing to me, ladies and gentlemen.
Strange European city of Bethesda.
So one of the most famous examples of this, Michael, is The Witcher 1. Okay, now, very important, The Witcher 1, not 2 or 3. One of the things that kind of sets Eurojank games apart is they are generally quite lauded by players.
Yeah.
The people that IGN hate, apparently.
Yeah, apparently.
and what that means is that they generally get quite a bit of buy-in, and then their budget goes up and they improve the games as they go on. The Witcher 3 now being considered one of the greatest games of all time.
Yes.
As a result. But that would be the most successful example of a Eurojank game. However, they're still made all over the place. The Thaumaturge, which is the latest one to come out, is a good example of it because it's made by a very small studio in Europe, as one might have guessed. If I could just find the goddamn studio. Fool's Theory is the name of the studio.
Yeah. Where are they based?
And they have kind of done a lot of these games, and this is their latest one, and it's proved to be pretty popular because it's kind of giving people that period piece kind of vibe that they enjoy. It's very Bloodborne. It's very, you know, Lies of Pi driven. And it's a bit janky, Michael, but that's the Eurojank genre.
But hold on a second.
Yeah.
I still don't get exactly what makes it a Eurojank genre.
Because when it was initially brought out, Michael, it was predominantly associated with Eastern European studios that made these very ambitious games that didn't go anywhere. For example, the Stalker series was a good example of that. S-T-A-L-K-E-R. It's an acronym. I never know what it stands for, though.
Stop taking all lesbians' cakes. I ran out of steam.
Right, that's where I'm wrapping it up, ladies and gentlemen. That's it from us this week. Ladies and gentlemen, apologies for the shorter episode this week. Entirely Ben's fault on the podcast. There are a few ways that you can get in touch with us to complain about that, if you so choose. You can find us on the interwebs at www.seomrabeag.com, S-E-O-M-R-A-B-E-A-G.com.
I'm trying to remember Irish to some degree.
To some degree, a little bit. You can also find us on our other interwebsite, which is www.sureluxurelisten.acast.com.
That's the podcast website.
Yeah, you can find us up there on the Instagram at Sure Luxure Listen Podcast.
Pop up on the Instagram and do a comment for Ben's mental health.
Or for our best work all round, growing exponentially, find us on TikTok at Sure Luxure Listen.
Yeah, there's all sorts of racist takes.
Oh, it's great stuff all together, mostly from me. Ladies and gentlemen, that is it from us this week. Bye-bye.
Okay, see you next week. Ben has to go. He's in a rush.
He has to go. I have to fucking go.
He has to go, everybody. See you, Ben. See you next week, Ben.
Bye.
That episode was just Eurojank.